Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Brian, I'm that much-needed R&R, so I'm being kept company by Evan on the production board. How you doing, big guy?
Just hanging, chilling, you know.
Just hanging out. It's a Friday afternoon. Yeah. It's a fun time. We're gonna enjoy this hour of radio here across Civic Media. If you want to participate, share your tangent with us, contribute to the show in any way, you can call or text. Those phone lines are open all hour long, 844-967-2789. You're listening to this program across the Civic Media Network here in Madison. I'm broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side. On Devil Radio, 92.7 FM, WTTN, 1580 AM. You're also listening in the Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM in Waukesha. Oshkosh Air Support in Oshkosh. Lake Air in Amory. Radio from the Center in Richland Center. And locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. Again, the number to call is 844-967-2789. It's been a pretty hectic week, Evan. We had this joke. Times are relevant sometimes, right?
Man. I mean, yeah, we can joke, we can laugh. It's all good.
Yeah, it's been a long week, and so we're going to cover a couple of the topics that we discussed this week, coming to conclusion with what we're keeping an eye on when it comes to the special election potential for the state's 8th state senate district. We've got an update with the rail strike. We've got some news as well, and we're going to be joined at 2:30 by Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. So excited to have a conversation with Matt, talking about something new that you'll be hearing on these airwaves, as well as how do we have more civil conversations? Because that's a major goal of what we're doing here at this network. And so Matt's going to be joining me at the bottom of the hour if you want to call between now and then, 844-967-2789.
Just so we're clear, not how does Devil Radio have more civil conversations, because we're leading the pack. Let's, you know.
Well, conversations take two parts, Evan. You got to have both sides being at least interested, sure, in attempting to have the same outcome. But you can't just there is some there about, is there an openness? Is there the ability for individuals to want to hear more civil debate, or is that not the case?
And sometimes silence speaks volumes.
That's true.
As has been the case this last week. It's been wild.
As you were pointing out before we got on the air today, the lack of condemnation and the fact that some of the farthest right-wing talking points are now mainstream. The fact that we have to hear about dinners and podcast episodes of these alt-right extremist views being talked about so openly now
and watched millions of times. I mean, this stuff is right. It's not really cream. It's like rancid cheese has risen to the top. It's
the really bad curds.
Yeah.
The really bad curds. And so we'll have that conversation with Matt Rothschild when he arrives at 2:30. But a quick update before we dive into the lead story of the day. Biden signed the law passed by the U.S. Senate yesterday to avert the rail strike, the version of the law that did not include paid time leave in it. So workers really being left out on a limb by the Biden administration, but more by Republicans in Congress, because it was Republicans in Congress that prevented that paid leave from entering it. So yes, this is not what labor deserves. It's not what these rail workers deserve going into the holidays. But the Biden administration has signed the bill, and it's really indicative that Republicans were the ones lacking the ability to vote for paid leave to be included. This is something that Democrats in Congress wanted to include. It passed through the House of Representatives. It did not. That version did not pass out of the U.S. Senate. And so Republicans, again, screwing the American workers, not providing this provision that is the most basic provision, pennies on the dollar for what these rail companies are making in profits, to receive those benefits, not going to be included in the congressional intervention to avert the rail strike. And so it seems, though, that the Biden administration and President Biden himself isn't shying away, Evan, from shaking a couple boats, because this is something that I saw yesterday, and this is where I'd love to hear some audience input of what their thoughts are on this. But the Biden administration and President Biden himself put forth a plan now, because the Democratic National Committee is going to be meeting today and throughout the weekend to determine what states are going to be the early voting states for the 2024 presidential primary selection.
Yeah.
The order that these primaries go in. Typically, Iowa is the first caucus. New Hampshire is the first primary. Those two states actually have it in their state laws that they are the ones that go first. It's an interesting dynamic, though, because can your state, like, how do you enforce that? If you just put out there that we must be first, it's just kind of a race to be earlier and earlier and earlier. And we've all been way too drawn out with how long this process is. The length of this process is already exhausting. But the fact that you've got these states competing to be first, and some of them going as far as enshrining it to be in their state laws to go first, is an interesting dynamic for for Biden himself to weigh in on changing that order up. So he's shaking the boat with these early states.
It's interesting, because I always saw, like, it was almost tradition the way that we sort of ordered these.
Yeah, but as Brian and I like to say, Evan, a lot of the times, just because it's always the way we've done it doesn't mean it's always the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And so it is an interesting dynamic, because both Iowa and New Hampshire, smaller states, so easier to go and do the in-person politicking, the going and shaking the hands, kissing the babies, as it's referred to, and going one-on-one politicking. And those are good things. Yeah, I think a candidate that's running for the highest office in the land should have some one-on-one interactions with the electorate. But at the same time, those two electorates are not very diverse electorates. They do not represent a whole lot of the pretty broad coalition, at least for the Democratic Party.
So many people, they're not plugged in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in those two states, they are. I think there is a duty almost felt by citizens of Iowa and New Hampshire. I think that is a part of it, Evan, that they like to take pride in the fact that they are the first in the nation to help determine the quality of presidential candidates. But is that, just because it's the way we've always done it, is that the best way to do it? And Biden, in his proposal, has decided that he wants to bump up a few states and move some others back. And so he's rustling the feathers of both Iowa and New Hampshire. The Biden proposal would put South Carolina, which is also near the front, I believe fourth, the traditional order for how the state contests are ran. It goes Iowa's caucus, New Hampshire's primary, Nevada's caucus, South Carolina's primary.
Yeah.
And we saw South Carolina played an integral role.
He just wants it because Biden won South Carolina.
Well, you could, if you were taking the cynical approach, you could say that. You could say that, Biden's just trying to bring forward a state that revitalized his presidential campaign and ultimately led to him getting the Democratic nomination.
That was wild, too. I mean, he was out. I remember thinking, like, okay, you know, moving past Biden. What do we got here? And then just changed.
South Carolina happened, COVID, everything. We had the safer at home orders. And yeah, it was an interesting 2020 presidential primary. I don't think it went the way that, and nobody predicted it going that way.
No.
And so Biden's proposal would bump South Carolina to be the first primary, and it would go first overall. And then New Hampshire would still be right up there, I believe, in the top five. But New Hampshire wouldn't be the first in the nation's primary, which is what its state law indicates it needs to be. And so it's a very interesting piece. I'm reading it over at the... I'm looking like I lost it. Oh, NPR, my bad. President Biden calls for a big shakeup in Democrats' presidential nominating calendar. And so it is important, though, because states run elections, but typically the political parties have been responsible for how you run primaries. And so it's going to be a very interesting conversation that's going to be had over the next several years. This is just a proposal being brought before the Democratic National Committee, Rules and Bylaws Committee. And so this is just the first step in how this plan may be implemented.
And it is important. I mean, it sets the tone for the entire race at the end of the day. It is. I mean, I'm sort of glad that it's being considered at all.
Yeah.
It was always seen as... I always saw it as tradition, essentially.
It's right. Sort of, it's something you wouldn't want to touch. You wouldn't want to touch it because everybody would be upset if you, especially the states. And so this is what President Biden's proposal is. He's calling for South Carolina, a state with a sizable black population, which notably turned around his fortune in the 2020 race, as NPR notes, to go first, followed an early window by New Hampshire and Nevada still, then Georgia and Michigan. So these would be the two states added in. Well, not even added in. Nevada would stay in the middle. South Carolina would get bumped up, but you add in Michigan and Georgia to better reflect the base of the Democratic Party.
What are we doing, Wisconsin? We got to get in there.
Well, does Wisconsin better reflect the Democratic base than those two states?
Madison,
I don't know.
Madison
does, but we're still pretty 50-50. So is Georgia, though, but Georgia has a much more notably a larger black population than the state of Wisconsin. And so I think this is an interesting conversation to have. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it out in the listening audience. 844-967-2789. We've also got some updates with what's going on with rate hikes here in the state of Wisconsin. So we'll get to those headlines and be joined by Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign coming up at 2:30. But I promise we'll get to your phone calls next. 844-967-2789. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. You don't want to stay tuned all hour long. It's got a lot to get to before the weekend, Evan. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the conversation, share your tangent on this Friday afternoon, 844-967-2789. President Biden shaking the boat a little bit among the at least early voting states for which states will be included in that honor of being first in helping select the next Democratic nominee. I think it's going to be a pretty interesting conversation. His proposal would be bumping up South Carolina, put it first, then New Hampshire, Nevada, Georgia, and Michigan, leaving Iowa out of that. And important to point out as well, the Biden proposal would do away with caucuses altogether. Interesting dynamic as well for the states that do still run caucuses.
I'm happy to see it, frankly. I always saw that tradition we've been speaking about as being kind of a walled garden. It was hard to penetrate. Left people out.
And
was,
caucuses are not very democratic in the nature of that they are. You have to stop. It's not as easy as going in to a voting booth. You have to just check the boxes, submit your ballot, and then leave. You have to dedicate an entire evening towards it. It's harder for working individuals to be able to go and take that amount of time. And so it is an interesting process because you get more deliberation, but there's other ways that you could enter in the conversation about deliberation. You could do ranked choice voting.
And who's doing the primaries. Deliberating? That's sort of what I think about, right? It's the people that are most plugged in, the most involved, the most connected.
Yeah, and here at Dueling Tangents, we want to hear your thoughts on it. So we're going to head over to the phone lines now. We got Tom in Cedarburg calling in. Tom, what's on your mind, and what do you think about President Biden proposing to shake up the order of the presidential primaries?
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You guys sound good together. I like listening to you. You guys make sense.
I appreciate that.
Not to quote as much tomfoolery.
Hey, man, there's always some time for tomfoolery, though.
Well, anyways, my point is that I could not agree more with you guys. I think it should be a federal law that every 4 years the top states or the first states would change, because the way it is now, really, it's unfair for the rest of the states. And Iowa realizes that, and that's why it's in their law, because if they didn't have it, they wouldn't have near the sway in federal politics. Look at the gasohol, look at the terrible product called high fructose corn syrup and how that's affecting the country. I mean, it's because Iowa's the first state. They have a lot of power, and these politicians have to kowtow to them to move ahead.
Yeah, when there's some interesting proposals, the Biden plan here does outline the responsibility to every 4 years review which states are in the early voting window, and so there could be some change there. I've seen some proposals, Tom, that if you want to pick a specific amount of whatever the margin may be, but if there are swing states in the most previous presidential election, say the four or five closest states in the last presidential election, those four states automatically became the early voting states for the primaries as well. So there's some interesting dynamics here. And there's some pushback as well, though, because I don't know if the same pushback will be in Iowa, but the Democratic Party in New Hampshire is already saying, well, we're going to go along. It's in our state law. This is how we're going to do it, kind of ignoring the Biden proposal. But there's also an interesting dynamic where we're hearing reports from members on the National Committee, the DNC, saying that, well, the state parties will have to do that at their own risk, and there will be some kind of retribution potentially from the National Democratic Party if state parties don't get in line with this proposal. So there's definitely some interesting dynamics there, Tom, and I really appreciate your phone call. We're going to head over to Dick in Madison now for his thoughts on the topic. Dick, what's on your mind today?
Well, a couple things. One of them is a leftover from yesterday, if I can, but I'm so darn old that I can remember when California was relevant, and it's way into June.
Yeah?
You know, I was in eighth grade when Robert Kennedy ran, and obviously he jumped in real late, but that propelled him, or would have, to the nomination. And that's, I think, well into June, or at least the first week in June. But to yesterday, you brought up this empty suit that's going to run for, I thought Michaels was an empty suit, running for Supreme Court, and both of them, but the credentials were Regency College Law School. I'm just kind of wondering, you know, the ritual at the UW when the law grads go through and they throw the canes over the goalpost.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have one where they throw, like, Old Testament-only Bible over and try and catch it? Or something along those lines, or what? I mean, I couldn't even believe it when I heard where they went to law school.
Yeah, that's where both of them.
Not even accredited until, yeah, in the late 90s before they were even accredited as a true law school. I mean, this is so phony. Her running, it's not even believievable.
Well,
she was pathetic in that case. I'm sorry. She had no control over the courtroom, so that's what you want in the Supreme Court?
I find it very fascinating already, Dick, that the knives are out in that one, and that the two conservative candidates are trying to their hardest to stake out the conservative lane and already attacking each other within hours of Judge Jennifer Darrow's announcement that she was running for state Supreme Court. And yeah, we're getting a little far away from Thanksgiving, so leftovers are acceptable today, Dick, but I don't know about going forward. We may have to test them out. But appreciate your phone call. It's an interesting dynamic of how these presidential primaries really evolve. We've, as Evan has said, we've been a little stagnant. Things have began to remain the same for a little bit too long, and I welcome at least the conversation that the Biden proposal brings, because maybe it's not the best way for us to pick the leader of the country. And being able to have some variety in it and make it less stagnant and get more input from different demographics around the country rather than the same 2, 3, 4 states in the same exact order every single time.
With the same people. I mean, all
same
of it.
People. I mean, I love the state fair, but there's only so many times you can have candidates, you know, grandstanding at the state fairs in Iowa to be able to choose who gets the nuclear codes? I don't know. There's other ways that we could come up with it. Folks, you're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. We're going to be joined by Matt Rothschild coming up after this quick break. If you want to join the show, though, 844-967-2789. Follow the show on Twitter at Dueling Tangents. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. If you want to join the conversation, share your tangent with us on this Friday afternoon. 844-967-2789 is the phone number to call. And I am joined in the Solidarity Realty Studios by Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. How are you doing this afternoon, Matt?
Not too bad, Luke. Thanks for inviting me in. It's always good to see you. Nice to be in the studio.
Yeah, it's always great to have you. And we were blessed with an extra presence of you this week here on the studios because we're going to have some new spots, Aaron, across the Civic Media Network, kind of to help fill in the public service announcements that we have occasionally overnights and to fill some spots here and there. Can you tell us a little bit about the spots that folks are going to be hearing on the Civic Media airwaves?
Well, a couple are the ones that we deal with all the time over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, like money in politics and banning gerrymandering, so those were easy. I've been dealing with those issues.
You were talking those ones out in your sleep.
Wake me up in the middle of the night. I'll spit that out in 60 seconds. But I also talked about one that's a little more obscure, which is reenfranchising the formerly incarcerated. Because in Wisconsin, there are more than 40,000 people who already served their time behind bars, and still they can't vote because they're on paper, as it's called. They're on parole or extended supervision, which sometimes can last 5, 10, 15 years. And that's wrong. People should be able to vote once they've served their time behind bars and are released into the community. They're asked to be good citizens, and yet their basic citizen rights are taken away. So I wanted to talk about that. But I have two public service announcements, if you want to call them that, on this issue of really civic dialogue in this country. How do we foster civic dialogue? And what does that mean? And in one of them, I just ask people to talk to two of the people in your social network, your broad social network, who might not agree with you politically. And certainly for anyone who's listening outside of the Isthmus of Madison, that's easy because you have social networks where you've got people of different political beliefs.
Yeah.
Sometimes in Madison, if you're on the Isthmus, and I lived one block from West High School, for on the near west side of Madison for about 20 years, and I could go a week without bumping into someone who disagreed with me. So that was a little harder there.
But, yeah, that's you got to go seek them out then.
Yeah, but it's important. You know, it's important to talk to people who don't agree with us. It's important because otherwise we get flabby intellectually or politically because we never bump into an idea that we don't agree with, and we just are in our little cocoon.
Yeah.
And that's not that doesn't build political muscle. It doesn't build the empathy muscle. But it also doesn't let you gain ground politically. I think it's bad politics tactically.
Yeah, because you kind of silo yourself
I mean, for progressives, what we want to do is not only get our base out, but convince a fraction of the people who don't already agree with us that our vision of what's best for Wisconsin, what's best for this country, what aligns with justice and freedom and equality is our way of thinking and not the other guy's way of thinking. And so we can't just write off half the people in Wisconsin because half the people in Wisconsin voted in a way that we didn't like, and half the other people in Wisconsin voted in a way that the people on the other side didn't like.
Right.
So are we just supposed to dismiss everybody in Wisconsin who doesn't agree with us politically? I think that's horrible for civic society and civil dialogue. And I also think it's bad politics. So I talked about that in a shorter version than we're talking about right now.
But we've got this extended time, so we're going to take it up and use it. Because when politics, you can boil it down to two things, persuasion and turnout. And so those are pretty big, broad tactics, like goals for campaigns, political figures, organizations. And so for some instances, I feel like there has been more focus on the turnout than persuasion. Because there has been the siloing of your ideas. You're like, well, I can't possibly talk to those individuals because they voted for Trump. Or I can't possibly talk to those individuals because they voted for Clinton. Because you can spin it either way depending on what side of the aisle you're looking at. And so there is an interesting divide, specifically here in Wisconsin. I think we're the kind of ground zero, if you want to say, for some of these divide and conquer politics, which the former governor, Scott Walker, even said out loud. He said the quiet part out loud. And so how do we recover that lost ground then? How do we get back to a place where we can have these conversations? Because I know in my personal life that there are some people that I do tend to avoid political conversations with. But at the same time, there's people I disagree with that I love having debates with. Right. And so one of my best friends he considers himself a more conservative individual. And we'll get into it for hours on end. And then we go and we open another beer, or we go and play some bags, or we go and do other things as well together. So it's not all politics. But how do we, as a society, you can get one-on-one case basis with it, but how do you do it as a societal level?
Well, actually, I think the way to do it at a societal level is do it one-on-one.
Okay.
And I'm hoping, you know, people who are listening now can identify one or two people in their social circles who don't agree with them politically, but they don't have a Nazi swastika tattoo on their left bicep. So, you know them, you know they're not a horrible person other than the fact that they voted a way you didn't like. I think it's important to have conversations with these people, political conversations, but not right away. You need to build your relationship with them if it's not already built. Mm-hmm. Find some common ground and shared values. And then over time, just try to, first of all, get over the mutual demonization.
Yeah.
And if they're in your social circle, I suppose they don't demonize you. But I hear people who I have in my social circle would say all liberals are this. And then I hear some progressives say, you know, all Republicans are that. Mm-hmm. And we need to get over that categorical way of talking.
Yeah, dealing in absolutes is rarely something that actually will help you in arguments or in generalizations, anything like that. When you go absolutes, that's not...
Well, first of all, it's not good politically. And secondly, all you got to do is find, you know, one progressive or one Republican who believes differently than your huge broad brush, and then you've just said something that's not true.
Yeah,
and so why are you doing that? And so I do think we need to come around to where we can have civil dialogue with people and try to bring some people around. Here's an example. You know, a lot of progressives bemoan the fact that 60% of Republicans in Wisconsin still believe the 2020 election was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is ludicrous. But if you look at that figure a different way, 40% of Republicans, you know, understand that 2 + 2 = 4 and that Joe Biden was elected dutifully and legally, and there wasn't a problem there. And so when you say all Republicans, are you going to write off that 40% too? I mean, that doesn't make any sense politically if we're trying to change people's minds.
Yeah, and a lot, and I think if you even want to turn away from those 40% and look at the 60%, just because they answered that in the poll doesn't mean that they necessarily are the most informed individuals on those subjects as well. Maybe they are like, oh yeah, I had a couple of news stories that I was paying attention to this year. They were talking about how there was allegations of voter fraud. And so they answered that poll as, oh yeah, well, I don't know for sure, because the little news sources that I heard said that there was maybe some potential out there. And so
part of that is the media that they're consuming.
Too. Yes.
If they are just on a 24/7 IV drip from Fox or OAN News or right wing Tidy Whitey Radio, or whatever you guys call it here.
It's got a couple different names, just the other side of the dial. Stay tuned to your civic media stations, folks.
Then, you know, if that's all they're consuming, though, that's all they're believing. And so it is important. And that's why civic media is so interesting to me as a political development here in Wisconsin. There we're getting out to people who, you know, aren't committed in one spot or another, or certainly have an alternative to right-wing to a Whitey talk radio. And it's important to give people that alternative. It's also important when I drive around the state all the time giving talks, I want to stay awake at night when I'm driving home. I'm just skimming the dial. Give me something to listen to. And I'm sure there are other people doing that. And if you can have interesting conversation, you know, you don't have to agree with it. Just make it interesting and provocative, and you'll get more listeners. And that's another way to create a kind of civil dialogue in this state, which has just been so sorely missing in action after Walker and his divide and conquer with Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply.
Yeah. And I wanted you to have this conversation. You and I thought were well posed to have this conversation, just because you are one of those individuals that are going out around the state. You're going and talking to the communities as the executive director of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, going and having either at county meetings, at all levels, not necessarily here in Dane County and Milwaukee County, but around Wisconsin. And that is also in part why what we're trying to do here at Civic Media, because there's not a whole lot of options. There's a lot of different stations out there, but a lot of them have the same cookie cutter pumped in nationally, and it's all a lot of the same. And for a long time, there was a vacuum, and there was no other alternative out there. And I think part of the reason that we can say that the siloing is happening and there's less ground, it seems like sometimes, maybe not actual less ground, but it just seems like there's fewer people that agree with you that you can find, is because there was a missing alternative out there, and there that vacuum was being filled by other things. And so having the dialogue, having the conversation and these discussions, and as you said, going and making an active effort to seek out individuals in your circle, social circles, that may not agree with you, or if you don't talk about, or they don't talk about it a whole lot, maybe it's a good opportunity to be able to develop those conversations and relationships as well, if somebody hasn't been thinking about these things.
I mean, as a baseline, it's just important that we recognize in our fellow citizens that, you know, we don't have horns on our heads when we're on the other side, that we're not evil people, because they're being fed this, especially from right-wing radio, that folks on the other side are just horrible, evil people, or QAnon thinks, you know, liberals are drinking the blood of babies.
When really, we're just getting ready for tomorrow's World Cup match. Right. That's what we're just like you, folks. We're just like you. We're excited to watch the U.S. take on Netherlands and hopefully crush the Dutch tomorrow.
So, I mean, that's kind of a baseline threshold, but also, you know, we can't wait for the demographics to change. I know I hear some progressives say, well, younger people are with us. They're not as bigoted as older people. You know, at some point we're going to have a majority. We're going to be able to win. I don't want to wait that long, you know, and I also think, you know, we can change people's minds. If we are steady on it, if we are respectful, if we listen, we need to listen to people, first of all, and where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And try to understand why they are thinking the way they do. The AP just did a story about right-wingers up in Hudson. It was a very interesting story entitled No Longer the Fringe.
Yeah.
But even in Hudson, you know, they're making fun of people who are in Hudson itself as being too liberal. They want to go, you know, a couple of exits further off the road where they're more conservative. And so we do have this divide in mm-hmm. the state, and we need to do something about bridging that divide.
Well, and the number one way to prove that persuasion doesn't work is to not attempt it at all. If you're not trying it, you're just writing it off, saying, oh, well, those individuals can't be persuadable. I think that says more about you trying to make, or ourselves trying to make the argument. If saying that you can't use persuasion as a tactic is a condemnation of your own views as well, because if you're saying that your views are so out there that these people can't be reached by them, that says a lot. And so,
yeah, and look at the great nonviolent revolution in social mores of our lifetime, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender.
The U.S. revolution. Senate passing the Respect for Marriage Act this week alone shows the
And how did that happen? It happened because people talked
exactly
on a one-on-one basis to people in their family, to people in their workplace, to people in their places of worship, to people in their social circles, whether it's, you know, a book club or exercise club or card game like I play in. You know, they came out of the closet literally and said, this is who I am. I'm as normal as you are. Mm-hmm. I'm as decent as you are. I'm as worthy of rights as you are. And look, the American public came around. The U.S. Senate came around. A lot of Republican senators came around to the U.S. Senate. Thank God for Tammy Baldwin. She did an incredible job doing the behind-the-scenes work. And she deserves a lot of credit for it. But this has been a revolution in our society, a nonviolent revolution for human rights and freedom.
Yeah. And so a lot can change when you're having the conversations, when you're reaching out and trying to persuade as well, not just necessarily waiting to every 2-4 years for an election that you're like, okay, we got to crank out the turnout. There's a lot of persuasion that needs to take place between now and then, and that's what we're trying to do here at Civic Media. We're joined in studio. You're listening to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Matt Rothschild of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Sharon, how do we get back to a little bit more of the civility and being able to have those conversations? We got some new public service announcements that we're going to be airing of Matt here across the network. We're going to try to squeeze in some phone calls as well in this final segment coming up, so stay tuned. 844 967-2789 if you want to contribute your tangent on this Friday afternoon. You can call or text that number. And it's a big weekend here around Civic Media. We're going to have the coverage of the Waukesha Christmas Parade on WAUK, the Shaw in Waukesha, as well as some other excellent events. You're going to want to stay tuned. We're going to cover those in the next segment as well. This is Dueling Tangents. We're going to be right back.
Said I'm pulling down the shades for the long ride. I never knew that I could feel so black and blue.
And I've been welcome back to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, minus the Brian who's receiving some, well, R&R these next couple days. So, but we are joined in studio by Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And Matt, it's going to be a pretty busy weekend going around here at Civic Media. We've got the Badger game tomorrow for Badger basketball versus Marquette is going to be played up in Lake Air, WXCE, as well as WFHR and IRI in Wisconsin Rapids, because it's a Marquette game. So it's going to be an interesting week there with sports. We also have the Waukesha Christmas Parade coverage for the first parade since the horrible attack last year. And so we'll be having special coverage of that broadcasting from the parade in Waukesha on WAUK 540 AM on Sunday. That coverage beginning around 3 p.m. We've got the Devil's Advocates are going to be joined by Professor Harvey Kay this afternoon. So we're going to give them a quick plug. And Packer Outright Opinions airs across Civic Media at 7 p.m. as well. So Jason Hafeman and his brother Ben Hafeman are going to be doing Packer Outright Opinions talking about Chicago Bears Week here in Wisconsin. So... it's interesting. We don't cover the World Cup, but on our fine network, but I'm going to talk about it. I think I may be one of the only hosts really discussing it. I don't know if a whole lot of other, folks here on the Civic Media team are watching the games, Matt, but, you're telling me you're going to be awake 9 a.m. tomorrow watching that game against the Netherlands.
Yeah. You know, I'm an old soccer player. Last time I was in here, I kicked the microphone over with my foot. So, yeah, very interested in watching the game. They're playing much better than I thought they would, and it's nice to see them advance, and I hope they get a victory on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I love the Bundesliga, so German soccer is kind of what I keep the closest eye on. So yesterday hurt. I got off the air, and they beat Costa Rica 4-2, and I was like, perfect, because the last time that I saw, Spain was beating Japan, which was needed to happen for Germany to advance. And so I got all excited. Germany had the 4-2 victory over Costa Rica. And then I'm driving home. I'm happy. I'm like going to look. I got home and I looked to see when Germany's next match was going to be then. Germany was eliminated because Japan came back and beat Spain on a pretty. It was. They had the virtual referee get involved on that one too to indicate that the ball was still kept in bounds. So it was a little tricky there. But
when I was playing soccer in the late 70s in high school, Germany was king. Germany and the Netherlands. Those were the two big teams. So.
Yeah, and then the fact that they now have been eliminated from group play two World Cups in a row, I think there's going to be some drastic changes going on with the German national team. For whatever reason, I do not understand why one of the strikers, Füllkrug, was not starting. He was left in as a reserve position, and he scored one of the goals yesterday, but...
My money's still on France this time.
Yeah, you still think France? I like Morocco. Morocco is looking really good, too. I haven't got a chance to check in on today's games, but I think the United States, depending on how they play on tomorrow morning, I think could show that they might have it in them to go pretty far, too, because I wasn't expecting a 0-0 draw for the U.S. against England. Like that was a very hard-fought game, and they played really good defense, and I want to say it was the first time in six matches that they left they played against a European rival and kept them scoreless. Yeah. And so that was an impressive game against England.
Yeah, I didn't think they were going to win that game, so that was a pleasant surprise.
A very pleasant surprise. Very pleasant indeed. And folks, I would be remiss if I did not say you can go to Hawks on State Street tomorrow, excellent sponsor of the station here in Madison. You can check out the World Cup game, U.S. versus Netherlands, tomorrow. Go... I believe doors open at 8:30 because the match starts at 9. So support Hawks local bar and grill on State Street if you're going out for a World Cup viewing party. But I believe we're both watching it from our homes.
I love Hawks, though. Yeah. And he did us a huge favor earlier in the year when we had that January 6th watch hearing, the final watch hearing.
I was, unfortunately, that one was in the middle of the show here, or right before or right after. It was too close to Dueling Tangents, so I wasn't able to get out there myself, but it looked like it was a great attendance for that one. And yeah, Hawk is terrific, and I think sport is a really good way, though, as well. And it is an aspect that Civic Media is doing here, providing local sports coverage from either high school sports or up some regional sports as well. I believe we got some local hockey and baseball teams.
Right. And this is how you get on common ground with people, the easiest way in Wisconsin. Yeah. Let's talk about sports.
How about them Packers? How about them Badgers?
Packers, Badgers, Bucks, high school football.
Bucks playing the Lakers tonight, too. Yeah, it's an excellent segue to be able to show as well that you're not some person that the maybe political figures or media figures are trying to demonize. Right. You don't have horns. You cheer for the same sports teams and you have similar values, but you just tend to vote in different elections differently.
And there are a lot of good groups in Wisconsin who are working this problem of polarization. The League of Women Voters. I love the League of Women Voters. Mm-hmm. I think they're one of the best groups around. They got chapters all over the state. And they're all about civil dialogue, too. And then there's something coming up December 7th and 8th, a Zoom conversation. This is sponsored by three groups. One group's called Resetting the Table, whose whole purpose is having this kind of dialogue across the divide. Wisconsin Council of Churches is a co-sponsor. Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice, a tremendous group here in Wisconsin. And it's called Resetting the Table, Courageous Communication Across the Divide. So you can look that up at resettingthetable.org or at Wisconsin Council of Churches or Wisconsin Faith Voices for Justice. They're having this two-day Zoom on just this topic, December 7th and 8th, about how do we talk to people here in our state who we don't agree with, but we don't want to just write out of the book of life, because that doesn't make any sense from a societal standpoint, from a compassion standpoint, or from a politics standpoint.
Yeah, it is much, it's hard work, persuasion, but it's very vital work to be able to have the conversations, have the dialogue, and be able to move the needle on where people are coming from on these issues. We got time for one quick caller here. We got Randy and Madison calling in. Let's fit Randy in before the end of the show. Randy, what's on your mind this Friday afternoon?
Well, I just wanted to throw in that I have on in a handful of occasions voted for people that I did not necessarily agree with, certainly not down the line, but they came up to me in my home, occasionally in my apartment, and they talked to me, and of course when you're doing that you can't be coming up, you know, with your doctrinaire crap. You've got to be ready to talk to people on different levels. And in Wisconsin legend, William Proxmire was famous for having won Bill McCarthy's seat by knocking on doors in every little town around there.
I appreciate your phone call, Randy, and appreciate that point, because that is absolutely true. There's a strong tradition here in Wisconsin as well as meeting people where they are and having those conversations. It's what we're trying to do here at Civic Media, and we've got some new public service announcements thanks to Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign providing those little service announcements.
Well, it was my pleasure. I was happy to be invited, and I'm delighted they're going to be running, and I hope it moves the needle a little bit.
Hopefully it will. I really appreciate you joining us here in the studio this afternoon, Matt. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. Go Team USA, and we'll be back on Monday at 2. Talk to you then.
See, I'm more important than you. I have got some big stuff going on. Big stuff.